5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
All right, lift off and the clock has started. Yes, sir, reading you loud and clear.
Ask a rocket scientist.
Oxygen, go. All systems are go.
Thanks for downloading this episode of Ask a Rocket Scientist. Chuck Woodford here with my rocket science pal, Bill Scaff. How you doing, brother?
Doing all right. How you
doing? I'm glad to hear it. We have many things to discuss on this episode. And we're going to start right off with a question that I got via our website, iHeartRocketScience.com. If you have any questions, you can submit them there. This comes from Declan Cross. He is in Rocket City, Huntsville, Alabama. And surfing around on the internet, he saw the story about how we are now going to have not only people on the moon in 5 years, but men and women. The first woman on the moon is going to step foot on that body by 2024. Is that right? Okay, so the Artemis program was announced recently. Everybody's super excited about it. Your job has been to build the ships to get us to the moon.
Absolutely.
How's that coming along, brother?
Are we going to hit this benchmark?
How realistic is this, I guess, is the question.
It would be a challenge given, like most things, space is it's enormously cool in its own right, but there's always money and politics involved. And while we have been striving to get to the moon, it wasn't by 2024 to put boots on the moon. And so there are many challenges.
Well, let's talk about the time frame up to this point. Okay, so with all the different programs that we've got going on, and it's not just NASA, there's all these other, there's SpaceX and everything else,
absolutely,
and Blue Origin. We're going to talk about all that later on in this episode. Mm-hmm. But for now, let's focus on this one NASA goal to get us. So the Orion craft going to get us to the moon.
Right, that's the transport vehicle.
What was the target date? Like, let's talk time frame pre this announcement.
Okay, so NASA had been working to a 2028 goal on having a lunar lander to put boots on the moon.
Okay.
And so pulling it into 2024, you can't just snap your fingers and make that happen. Like most things, if you want to go faster, it costs money.
Yes.
And right now, Congress is very averse to spending more money on this than
or anywhere
really
near
are.
The amount of money that
right.
needs to be spent.
This That's is the
a,
thing.
It's not probably a staggering amount,
it's
right?
It's billions. Well, to accelerate a program that amount, and it's not just the moon mission that has to accelerate. Everything has to accelerate because the goal was to use Orion to get Gateway into orbit, which is a small space station we were going to put behind the moon in one of the Lagrange points. So
Wait. Okay. So there was going to be a space station behind the moon.
Yes.
What purpose does that serve?
So if you want to think big picture.
I do.
Okay. Let's go big picture.
I think Declan Cross in Rocket City, he's thinking big picture.
Absolutely.
What are we doing here?
Absolutely. So in order to learn how to live in space for a long period of time, which is going to be a necessity to going to Mars, if you put a small space station around the moon, and part of the thinking is to put it in a Lagrange point on the far side.
What's this that you're saying? Lagrange?
Lagrange, right. He was a mathematician. There are these 5 points in the Earth-Moon system that if you put an object there, they stay right there.
Interesting.
The gravitational force is balanced.
Okay, so they won't plummet to the body. They won't drift away from the moon or the Earth.
It won't even circle the moon. It stays relatively right over the same point on the moon.
We're going to have to talk about this
in
some
future
episode.
This is some cool physics.
Okay, all right.
And the reason for doing that is you can practice teleoperations on the moon.
What teleoperations?
Remote operations of vehicles. Say you've got a rover on the moon. Well, right now, the rover's on Mars. There's such a massive lag in communication ability that they have to do their own thing.
Got it. Okay, so what you're saying is we have a rover on Mars. If we wanted to do something, we send it a message, like if you saw the movie The Martian, and it takes X amount of time for the device, the rover, to get that to execute.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is this little what is it?
It's called teleoperation. Think remote control, like when you drive a car.
Gotcha.
Well, you're close enough from moon orbit to drive the rover real time and tell, I want to see that rock. Let's go get it. Let's manipulate it. I now, as a human, could then control what the rover is doing instead of saying, okay, I want you to go that general direction. We'll wait for next command.
Got it.
So our first
So it would be like if you had a remote control car and you were standing in your front yard and you pushed it to go forward.
Yeah.
And then 20 seconds later, it finally went forward.
Well, it's faster
well,
than
no,
that.
Well, no, but I'm talking but. Just the concept of the delay. So what we're trying to do is decrease the delay.
Well, it's to give us experience because our first efforts to Mars aren't going to be put boots on Mars. It's too difficult, right? You think Apollo. They incrementally approach going to the moon.
My dogs are excited about that.
They are. The moon is exciting.
So now today we're recording at my house, and those are my two dogs, Dojo and Millie.
They're dubbing in as for Marlena sound engineers.
Very excited. Doing some good microphone checks there. All right, guys, that's enough. Thanks, boys. So before our sound engineers chimed in there.
Yes, they said, you got
Dojo
that.
And Millie, my dogs. Please continue.
Okay. So our first efforts to Mars are not going to be likely to be to put boots on Mars. If you think about the difficulty in doing that and the risk, if you think Apollo, they were much more incremental. They got to the moon before they were put foot on the moon.
Right.
Right. You've got to test everything out.
Yeah. So what you're getting at is with the Apollo program, I mean, first of all, we dumped so much money into that because we were terrified that the Russians were going to get to the moon first. So it was primal fear that motivated the entire nation. Sure, Kennedy had the inspiring words, but what Kennedy was also saying was, we got to get there before the Russians
do. We got to beat the Russians.
And so we're going to move heaven and earth, pay X amount of dollars, however much it takes. And so, but to get there, we did it in 10 years, which is incomprehensible to think we had the technological advancements that were made in that amount of time. But you were right. We did it in stages. It wasn't just like build a rocket, put it on the moon, guys get out, plant the flag, we're good.
Right. So if you think Mars is going to be similar with the added challenge, it takes a minimum of 6 months to get there. So not only do you have to learn how to survive in free space, which has its own challenges we've talked about many times, radiation
and all that stuff, yes,
et cetera.
I've learned so much for these podcasts.
It would be far easier to put down on one of Mars' moons for our first effort there because it's a lot easier to get off the moon. There's not a gravity well.
Got it.
Right. So if you're on these moons, could you drive a rover real time on the surface of Mars? Yes. Mm-hmm. Right. So you have some other abilities now that you don't have to put foot on Mars to do some things that would give us a big advantage to making that trip out there.
So what you're saying is when we go to Mars, we don't necessarily need to land foot right directly on Mars. We can land on one of the moons first, make sure that we can get there, and it's easier to leave because the gravitational pull isn't so hard, so we don't need as much fuel to lift off.
Right.
The whole concept of landing is a lot easier to do on a moon of Mars than the actual planet. And then from there, we can stage and get down.
Right.
We can figure out how to... So let's equate this to this... it's called the Artemis program, which is NASA's desire to speed things up and get not just a woman on the moon, but men and women on the moon.
Absolutely.
By 2024.
Right. And one thing I haven't gleaned from this acceleration is whether they want to bypass putting Gateway into orbit first. They want to go straight to a lunar landing.
Got it.
Do we want Gateway and have us use that as a staging point then to descend to the moon? There are some logistics to work out on. Does it alter NASA's big picture plan?
We don't know whether we're taking every single benchmark and crunching them all together or whether we're eliminating some.
Resequencing.
I was going to say, there's a potential we may do them in an opposite order. Right?
Exactly. Okay. Right. We could change up. You know, there's no hard and set rule that says we have to do things in a given sequence. The problem is you have to have the hardware to do it. And that's really where the challenge to 2024 is going to hit us in a very real sense, because SLS was Launch System. It's the heavy launch rocket that NASA is developing.
Okay.
Think of it as a current generation Saturn V.
Got it.
And
the big giant white rocket that got us to the moon.
Exactly.
We're building this one's even bigger.
Yeah,
right?
Its original version is as powerful Saturn V, and then the growth variants once we get the real engines put on it. Mm-hmm. So the first versions will use the existing
growth variant.
Yes.
That's such a great phrase.
So the first versions of this rocket are going to use the existing supply of shuttle main engines.
Okay.
Okay, we're going to use those up.
Got
and
it.
That allows the rocket to fly sooner. But they're developing an all-new engine for it, which will then increase its lift capacity, increase its capabilities. So down the road, the rocket will be even more capable. And a lot of people now, we see SpaceX. They've got Falcon 9 Heavy. It's like, well, why aren't we just using Falcon 9 Heavy?
Right.
In the initial version of the SLS, it's not much more powerful than a Falcon 9 Heavy.
Okay, so what you're asking is, and we'll talk about this a little bit more a little later in the show, is it possible for NASA to team up with some of the private industries, the Elon Musks, the Jeff Bezoses, whoever, to maybe get us up there quicker?
Absolutely. Are there other options to get us there by 2024 using commercial space? And there might be. There's no free launch, right? Because the SLS is a bigger, more powerful.
There's no free launch. Come on, Bill. Lunch, that's funny. Lunch, can we
lunch,
take a
I
minute?
Said lunch.
Can we take just a minute and appreciate the level of that joke? That was really good. Okay, thank you. Oh, that was good. No such thing as a free launch. I'm making t-shirts. All right, go ahead.
Actually, like
but to your point, and like I say, we're going to talk about commercial space because we've got some big benchmarks we're going to be hitting soon, hopefully with the commercial spacecraft launches. But so NASA teaming up with Blue Origin or something like that,
or SpaceX, right?
Or SpaceX.
Could we? I mean, in order to get to 2024, we're going to have to do something different.
We're going to have like a kumbaya moment.
Yeah.
But SpaceX isn't going to do it, like you say, for free. It's like, all right.
Well, no, you got to buy the rocket, and knowing that the rocket's capability isn't quite what the SLS is intended to be, how do you work around that? Multiple launches to get all the hardware in space and assemble it in orbit? You're going to have to compromise, right? Again, this is a rethink on what would it take to pull this in by 4 years, given the state of SLS right now, which isn't going to fly until current estimates are like late 2020 or 2021.
Okay.
Right, so we're not going to get that rocket off the ground soon. Mm-hmm. And that flight's a test flight. That's not the one we're going to use to get to the moon. It's supposed to be
just to prove that we can do it.
Yeah, it's going to have the Orion EM-1 vehicle on top of it. That was what the first SLS is slated for. And so that mission keeps sliding to the right and being delayed because the rocket's not ready. So you can't get Orion into orbit without a rocket under it.
Mm-hmm.
So that first mission is already, it's already destined to fly Orion, mm-hmm. or at least that was the hope, right? You're not talking the first rocket that can be used to get to the moon on this lander mission. It's a subsequent rocket.
So let's take a moment and take this. Okay, first of all, let's talk about the name Artemis.
Yeah.
It's so
cool
smart.
Name.
It's a great name for this program because, tell me the history of Artemis briefly.
So we had Apollo, which was our first effort to go to the moon. Well, that was the male.
There were twins. God.
They're twins, right?
Yeah. Apollo had a twin sister.
Yes,
named
Artemis. Exactly. So it's the twin. It seems like a logical name to, it's a really cool extension of the Apollo program. Now we're going to the next program.
Yes.
It's now Artemis.
It's now Artemis.
And it does, like, we were talking about before the show started, like, well, part of the goal of NASA now is, unlike Apollo, which was, predominantly white male, mm-hmm. test pilots.
Not just white male, short,
yeah.
white male test pilots. They can cram into very tiny spaces.
Yeah, they're lighter, they eat less, they're smaller.
Yes.
NASA's definitely moved beyond that point. Our astronauts.
Well, I mean, just look at the space shuttle program.
Exactly.
An incredibly
the
diverse
is much
array.
Much more diverse now, yeah. right? So.
And so they're hoping to continue that, obviously.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, all right, so we've got Artemis. We've got men and women going to the moon in the next 5 years. Let's talk briefly about the politics of this, because over the last, 15, 20, 30 years, and it doesn't matter what your political affiliation, it seems every single president eventually addresses NASA and says, we're going to do great things. And then all of a sudden they're out of office and we haven't done the groundwork hasn't been laid to get to the great things.
Right.
So I'm not ragging on Vice President Mike Pence at all, but he is the one that kind of went to NASA and they came up with this announcement about Artemis getting this done in 5 years. So what's the reality politically, financially? There needs to be a massive infusion of money to get this done, correct?
Yeah, you can't just pull hardware forward 4 years without a hit to cost.
Because you're telling me
And like you said, politics are also involved because, the state's building SLS and Orion, they're all vested in this too,
yes,
right? They've got a large workforce that's building this hardware.
Yeah, this is an awful lot of jobs.
It is a lot of jobs on the line and a lot of money. And so NASA had been planning for 2028. The problem with deploying to 2024, and as even NASA's pointed out on their own response to Mike Pence, was, well, these are political dates. These aren't dates that matter in the technical world, though, they're political dates. The current cabinet wanted to fly humans by 2020 and get to the moon by 2024. And those dates, it's hard to overlook the coincidence those are both election years. So I understand, what they're trying to do.
Sure.
It's just you can't just snap your fingers and accelerate hardware and missions without either a large cash infusion or rethinking the missions.
Right. Yeah.
And that's what's going to have to happen. And so NASA already basically rebuffed the 2020 humans in space bit going to the moon by 2020 because SLS isn't ready. And then putting Orion on a Falcon 9 Heavy, it's a very high risk and it doesn't enable the mission to work the way it was intended. So they said, no, we will not do this by 2020.
Mm-hmm.
This is a false date from the sake of a technical milestone. We need to do this right. We have humans on board.
Got it.
We're not going to risk that. 2024 is similar. They'd like to have it happen while it's current cabinet. And like you said, every cabinet has its own dreams for NASA. Mm-hmm. And NASA, unfortunately, is tremendously hamstrung by
well, NASA's goals playing the long game.
NASA's playing the long game. Exactly.
NASA has to think we have 15 years to accomplish this goal. Whereas whatever the what, and again, this isn't a party affiliation. This is every single administration that has come in
right.
Says, all right, I got 4 to 8 years to make an impact. We're gonna make this big announcement. NASA's gonna do this thing, and NASA's like, all right, where's the money? Because
right.
we need a lot of cash to accomplish right. this goal.
And what people forget is. Take a given president, just arbitrarily, and then they have a goal for 4 to 8 years, like you said. So NASA's stampeding down this path to meet those goals. Well, the next president comes in and changes those goals. Well, they don't just drop what they're working on. They can't stop funding these things because now they're well in works. Because you think things that are very long term, like the James Webb Space Telescope, or even back to Hubble, they don't just stop working on what they're working on. You can't, right. It's not like their entire budget can now just be redirected. They're finishing what they had started. So then if you want to give them another task on top of that, that money's got to come from somewhere.
Right, right. So the money has been allocated already to Orion and the SLS and accomplishing this thing. Now, if we want to move the goalposts, okay, now how can Orion and SLS morph into this new
right.
project,
right.
this
can
new
the existing,
goal?
Right, so there's two aspects to that.
Can you take the existing
hardware and engineering, can it be veer to handle a new goal, or do you have to start a whole nother pathway from scratch? And that's kind of what's happened to the Orion program, because it was supposed to have flown humans by 2014. Well, when the program started in 2006, it was part of George W. Bush's effort. He, like I said, the president's come up with their goals for NASA. He said, I want to go back to the moon. Mm-hmm. We need to go back to the moon.
And I'm like, yes, please.
Right.
Let's do it. That's
where the Constellation program was born. Well, that started the path of Orion, and then even the rockets, because that needed new rockets. So SLS started roughly the same time period, but there was a series of rockets. It wasn't just one. There was lighter capacity, heavier capacity rockets. Then President Obama came in and said, well, I'm not opposed to space, but we don't have a reason to go to the moon. We'd like to justify what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And he also saw that there were some technical issues with the rockets. He said, okay, as a system, this might not be the most advantageous way to go forward. So they canceled Constellation and then resurrected the parts of it that they thought had merit to go forward.
Right.
So Orion kept going, SLS kept going, but the other rockets did not. So only parts of Constellation got moved forward.
Got it.
And at the time they were even talking developing a lunar lander, so that got completely shelved.
Yeah.
So they kept only two pieces, Orion and SLS.
And now here we are, 10 years later, wondering, boy, it'd be nice to have a lunar lander.
It would be
oh,
nice.
Oh, we have to start from scratch.
We got to start that program again.
So, and again, this isn't a Bush, Obama,
no,
Trump,
no, it's,
whatever.
It's absolutely
this
not.
Is,
this is not.
This is
it's,
administration by administration every year.
And funding. And that's the other problem.
Yeah.
So when George W. Bush started this, it was properly funded, I want to say, for maybe 1 to 2 years before the budget got cut.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So while we were intending to fly humans by 2014, Orion was supposed to have been fully functional by 2014. That was supposed to have been the equivalent of EM-1's test flight should have been in 2014, and now it's 2021. Well, when the budget got cut almost literally in half, you know, for a number of years, that has an impact on that deadline, because now you can't procure
sure.
hardware. You can't ramp your workforce up. It's a game of trades. And so what happened is that's why the dates pushed back. And a lot of people wonder, well, why on earth did this take so long? Apollo did this in 9 years. Why has Orion been kicking around for 13 years?
Right.
And we still haven't launched.
Well, and again, it's because China doesn't want to go to Mars. China isn't going to put a man on Mars. If China's announced that we're going
right.
to put a man on Mars in 6 years, your head will explode how quickly
oh, yeah.
all
you'll,
of this
you will stay
funded.
Fully funded. And that's
yes.
the problem right now is we're not fully funded, and it delays the program.
Yeah.
So again, like you said, this isn't a particular party or a particular president. This is the reality of politics. And every 4 to 8 years, they changed course. And mm-hmm. so NASA just has to respond and do what they can with the money they're given.
And
again, it's not all going to Orion. They're not going to cancel the other programs. So it's like, well, if Orion's cut, Orion's cut, and it slows it down.
Right, right.
Right.
Okay, so where we're at right now is Artemis is a great thing to shoot for.
Absolutely.
Obviously, we will want a lot of diversity in space and definitely
Most
on the
definitely.
Moon. But Declan, first of all, fantastic question. This was a great discussion. Thank you for submitting it. I'm nervous. I don't think that 2024 date is realistic at all. It will happen. We will get to the moon, but I don't know if 2024 is going to work. Okay, so we talked a little bit about space, the commercialization of space, Blue Origin, SpaceX. Apparently, there's a lot of benchmarks coming up in June, a lot of launches and a lot of things that they're going to try to hit, deadlines and things. I want to get an update from Bill, see how realistic that is. And okay, we will do that after this break. This episode of Ask a Rocket Scientist is sponsored by, I don't know, maybe you? What, do you have something really cool you'd like people to know about? Shoot me an email. We'll talk. You can find my contact info at the website, iHeartRocketScience.com. Yeah, let me know this cool thing you've got. I could mention it here on the podcast for a price. All right, back to the episode. Okay, we are back. Ask a Rocket Scientist. Chuck here, Bill there. We talked briefly about the commercialization of space and the role of Blue Origin and SpaceX in our future space exploration. So let's talk a little bit about, you said that there are some big deadlines, some big tests that are supposed to be coming up soon.
So the heart of that is 2019 is the year we were supposed to cut over from using Russian launch services.
I didn't know that. I didn't know by 2019 we were supposed to be completely done with the whole Soviets getting us up to the space station. We were supposed to be self-sufficient?
Right. We were supposed to be on U.S. vehicles by 2019.
And we are, like, we are doing flights to the space station, but we're not completely independent. We still need Russian help.
We're still launching on Soyuz, and we only have one more vehicle purchased to get astronauts to the space station. So right now, NASA is looking at procuring two more additional flights, given the status of the commercial efforts between SpaceX and Boeing. So when you talk space stations, Blue Origin isn't in that race currently.
And Blue Origin is Jeff Bezos, right?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. That's Amazon. Same Jeff Bezos from Amazon. Mm-hmm. He has a different vision of what he wants to do with space. So he didn't vie for space station support.
Okay.
So he's doing something else. But SpaceX and Boeing are on contract.
And SpaceX is Elon Musk. Obviously, correct. Boeing is Boeing.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And those are the three big ones? Those are the
commercial companies?
Those are the only three commercial companies that are doing this now?
No, there's more. When you think cargo resupply to space station, there's other companies involved. There are other companies involved.
Mm-hmm. We're nothing here at iHeart Rocket Science, if not grammatically correct.
Exactly. So Sierra Nevada is in on that. They have the Dream Chaser unmanned cargo vehicle they're developing. We also have the smaller vehicles from Orbital Sciences and some other companies that do provide cargo services to space station. It's when we're talking manned, though. That's the big leap in 2019.
Okay, gotcha. So the big ones
manned
are
delivery to space station. And that's SpaceX and Boeing. And June was supposed to be a monumental month for spaceflight because
June of this month,
this 2019. Yes, this month coming up. So SpaceX and Lockheed Martin were both supposed to test their abort systems for their manned vehicles in June, and Boeing was right behind them. I want to say it was July. If you've been watching the media in the last month, SpaceX was testing their manned Dragon and trying to ground test the abort system. And well, we've said it before, we'll say it again, space is hard. Their abort motors exploded and severely damaged the vehicle.
And again, completely unmanned. This is all just a test.
It was a test on the ground, right? Yeah. No humans on board.
And nobody was injured nearby. This was all just a mechanical failure.
Yes.
There weren't technicians nearby.
So no.
No fatalities.
No, and this is part of the process. They wanted to test fire them on ground because that vehicle was going to be put on a booster and an abort test was going to be flown at altitude, originally scheduled for this June for SpaceX. And It just highlights, one, that space is hard. Two, that you have to test these rockets out on as much as you can to prove them safe for humans.
Well, and that gets to our previous topic. You can't just build a rocket and send it.
No.
In 5 years, you can't escalate the time frame. You've got all these, but you have to test.
There are benchmarks. Test what you fly is a credence in the space world because we've learned by the school of hard knocks that things don't work the way you think you are, and space is difficult.
Yeah.
Space will find that weakness and make you pay. So you've got to follow these protocols. And SpaceX was doing the right thing. They had it bolted on ground. They were firing their abort motors in preparation for the flight, and something went wrong.
Okay, so obviously that'll be a delay for SpaceX.
Yeah,
so you said that they were supposed to do some more testing in June.
They were going to flight test that system in June. So now it's obviously pushed back. They have several manned Dragon capsules in production. So they're going to take the next one in the line, which was supposed to be the first one to actually carry humans. That will likely do duty as the test vehicle for the abort.
Okay.
Right. So they're going to have to slot that in that place.
Got it.
Boeing was supposed to, I believe, fly their abort test in July, if I remember right. News has been a little sparse on the Boeing effort. Last I heard is it was likely delayed, and I'm not sure until when.
Okay.
They're still shooting for 2019, as is SpaceX. Now, we were supposed to fly humans by the end of this year. Now we're looking at maybe their abort test will be by the end of this year.
Now, by when you say we, does this mean
United States?
Mm-hmm. This doesn't actually mean NASA. This doesn't necessarily mean SpaceX. This is the collective.
The collective we is the United States. These were test flights with actual astronauts on board for a first flight test.
But these are commercial institutions. This isn't NASA.
No.
Okay, gotcha.
NASA's buying these vehicles from SpaceX and Boeing.
Okay.
But like you said, this is kind of like buying a Boeing airplane or a car. Like, these companies are making a product. If you want to buy it, you can go buy it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's NASA's idea on commercial space, is that they're no longer going to micromanage low Earth orbit. They're letting the commercial companies develop and create the infrastructure needed, and they're going to buy rides.
Okay. Got it. Okay. We'll allow Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk to get us off the Earth into low Earth orbit.
Right.
And once they get all that test driven and all that equipment figured out, then we'll pay them for cargo space.
We're Ubering. There are Uber to space.
And while we're
doing low Earth orbit space.
I was going to say, and while we're doing that, we're also building this thing that's going to take us much further.
And I'm glad you brought that up. So the idea was, by NASA freeing up their resources to low Earth orbit to the commercial companies, it gives them resources that they can focus on exploration, which is something that they did in the 60s. I mean, you had Mercury, Gemini, Apollo, and then even the shuttle, and then it's kind of decreased. It isn't their primary mission anymore, and they want to get back to that. They
Got
want
it.
To explore.
Mm-hmm.
And so now their resources are more centric on Orion, for example, getting back to the moon, where they've seeded low Earth orbit to commercial companies.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it's a grand strategy. It's very purposeful what they did.
But what you're telling me is that with the, you know, space is hard, Bezos, Elon Musk, Boeing, they're having a difficult time. They obviously are finding out what NASA has learned over the last 50 years is that we are going to set these deadlines, but we may have to push them.
Absolutely.
Because we're not ready.
Right. And they were supposed to have had, they were supposed to have been where we are today 2 years ago. 2017 was our original goal, to be flying humans on commercial crew.
So SpaceX wanted to be...
That was the original NASA
airborne
contract. Actually, not just SpaceX. This was NASA's goal. Was when they went to these companies, they wanted to be flying humans on commercial crew. And remember, when I say commercial crew, this is SpaceX and Boeing. That was supposed to have been in 2017, but they've had troubles. You know, it's difficult. Space is hard.
Yes.
And no one's going to force them to fly a vehicle before it's ready. And so we've slid to 2019.
Got it. Wisely.
Well, you know, absolutely. Right. Well, as a testing show, you're putting people on board. And we tend to forget that. We think, you know, you see these rockets launching all the time. It's like, how hard could that be?
Right.
Well, you know, you realize that our track record for rockets is, you know, 1 in 100 or worse on failures.
Mm-hmm.
You know, shuttle was actually 1 in 80. I forgot. When you account for the two shuttles accidents.
We lost.
It was 1 in... I can't remember the odds. It was like 1 in 70, 1 in 80. It wasn't great odds. And even rockets that we fly satellites on have issues.
Yeah, we see those videos once or twice a year of some kind of mishap on the launch pad or...
Right, and they're not that often, fortunately, but it does still add up to a percentage that's... It's not like you flying on an airplane or driving your car. It is significantly still more dangerous.
Much riskier.
Or challenging
to
get to space.
Do, again, trying to be grammatically correct, SpaceX, Blue Origin... They're learning that this is not just a, we'll just build the thing and do the thing and put the thing up in the thing and we'll launch the thing.
Right. And Boeing. Remember, it's really Boeing and SpaceX on commercial crews. Blue Origin is also vying to take humans to space, but they're taking a different path.
And right now, it's space tourism.
Yeah, they're not on a contract to NASA. They're doing something different.
All right.
They're kind of walking their own path. And you might have seen recently that Jeff Bezos unveiled a lunar lander. That wasn't necessarily as a response to NASA's proposal.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to take that on his own.
He's just like,
I'm going to the moon. I'm going to do it by 2024, and I'm commercial. I can do whatever I want.
And I'm going to take a whole bunch of ladies.
Exactly. I don't know if there's a love alliance.
Well, he's single
in his
now, right?
But,
isn't he single?
He is now. It's true. I haven't really checked out the interior of his capsule to see what's on board.
Yeah.
Is
it, he showed us the exterior of the lunar lander,
rather,
not the Austin Powers-ish interior of the lunar lander.
I'm having a comical image of Shag carpeting on the inside of his lander. I don't think that's not going to work.
It might. I don't know. He's pretty smart, pretty savvy. Okay, all right. Well, it's good to know this. It's good to know, you know, Elon Musk, Boeing, they're figuring out this isn't as easy as we thought it was going to be, but they continue going forward. And nobody's throwing in the towel.
No, they haven't given up. You know, they're just working through the hurdles they have to work through.
Good. So they may not hit these benchmarks in June, but I'm sure they'll be hitting them later on this calendar year. When do we think the first human being is going to be launched on one of these crafts? 2020 now?
At the current pace, 2020.
It's got to, at earliest.
Yeah. Given that they both need to fly an abort mission before they fly humans, and if this setback moves them, let's say just even 6 months, it's likely that it would push the human launch to 2020. And that's why NASA's hedging by trying to buy slots on two more Soyuz rockets, okay, or spacecraft, sorry.
Yeah.
But Lockheed is still scheduled to fly their abort test in now July 3rd.
Okay.
And that's the Orion abort test. Mm-hmm. So today is a big year. I mean, you've got commercial crew flying launches and test flights. You've got exploration vehicles, in this case, Orion flying test launches.
NASA-affiliated
company. Uh-huh. Yep. And that's slated for July 3rd. And that's going to test their abort system. They're going to launch it up to 60,000 feet, hit the abort button, make sure it can pull capsule safely off a rocket in case of an emergency.
Mm.
Right. Okay. So there's a lot of... It's not as I guess the visibility isn't as great as if there were humans on board, but these are all the tests that you have to go through, you know, to show that if you're saying we can keep humans safe in the case of a adverse condition, rocket goes bad,
right,
we've got to prove it. You don't just say it can do it. You've got to prove it.
Well, and as we talked about a couple of episodes ago, it's a bad day in space when you've got to abort.
It is.
That's not a pleasant experience.
No.
If you missed that episode, I think it was three or four episodes ago, we talked about in Russia, they did have to abort a launch and just what that does to the body and the whole process. So incredibly important tests that are going on right now. Okay, well, coming up in a few moments, one of my favorite segments, science or bullshit. We're going to talk about one of my favorite fictional characters of all time. That's right, Godzilla. When we come back... This episode of Ask a Rocket Scientist is also brought to you by the greatest smell on Earth, the smell of fresh cut grass, especially if your kids are the one mowing the lawn, doing the child labor. Yeah, that's when it smells best. Yeah, the smell of fresh cut grass and funnel cakes. Can you tell I've got summer on the brain? Yeah, funnel cakes, fresh cut grass. Oh, such great smells. Okay, back to the episode.
Welcome back to Ask a Rocket Scientist. Now it's time for science or bullshit.
That's right, it is time for our favorite segment, Science or Bullshit. And we have a special guest today, my son Eddie. Say hi, Eddie.
Hi.
Eddie, tell us a little bit about yourself. How old are you? What do you do? Who are you?
So I am 11. I go to Denver School of the Arts. I'm a dance major. That's really all that's interesting about me.
Well, you're also science curious, aren't you?
I mean, yeah, sometimes.
Sometimes. When I tell him he has to be science curious, Eddie is definitely science curious. So, Bill, we want to talk about the new Godzilla movie that's coming out. Because I'm a huge Godzilla fan going way back to my early days. And I've forced my kids to watch some of the Godzilla movies. You like Godzilla, Eddie?
Sometimes.
What do you mean, sometimes?
I mean, some of the movies are better than others.
True. Do you like the old school or the new movies?
I mean, I saw the really old one, Godzilla versus King Kong.
Yeah?
Those were just puppets, but it's fine.
But no, did you enjoy that? Or do you like the more...
I haven't seen it for a while, but I do remember watching it and enjoying it, but I was like 4 at the time, so...
Got it. Yeah, I forced these movies on my kids at a very early age.
And child services weren't called?
No, so
nope.
Far,
right. So far, so good.
Gotten away with it. But we have watched the most recent, like the Godzilla movies and the King Kong.
Yeah, we watched Kong.
Skull Island,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Skull Island. That was really good.
Oh, yeah.
And then we saw, like a while ago, we saw the big live action Godzilla with like the super well CGI, like... Rawr.
Yeah, the modern day.
Well played.
Super CGI Rawr. I think that's how they describe it. Yeah, we saw the most recent Godzilla, which came out a couple years ago. And so, yeah, so we're definitely like on board for these new Godzilla movies. And so in my mind, I always thought that there was a, you know, a nuclear blast in Japan that took this animal and radiated it and turned it into Godzilla. But I did a little research, and it says that, according to Wikipedia, Godzilla is a prehistoric sea monster. that's awakened and empowered by nuclear radiation. That's what Wikipedia says.
Well, we've also talked a little bit about this, like, before we started this. Like, it was also, like, a little, like, sea iguana.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so we haven't been very consistent with like, whatever it is that got turned into or got awakened by the radiation.
Yeah, that's right. Because with the Godzilla, so Bill, you did you were saying that the Godzilla movie that came out in the 90s,
yeah, late 90s, used the sea iguana.
So in essence,
submarine iguana.
It was okay with all the nuclear testing that went off. Because if I remember that correctly, there was a lot of nuclear testing that went off in the South Pacific. You know, and transformed a sea iguana right into Godzilla.
Right, I think that was the basis for that movie. And as Eddie says, like, well, we seem to recreate many ways.
Was that the the big skinny one?
Yes. The big skinny one that rampaged through New York City with Matthew Broderick in it, the kid from War Games.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
So that was the hipster Godzilla. With the slim fit jeans.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. The skinny jeans on. Yes.
But then there's the thing where they breathe the fire.
That's what I was getting to next.
There's an excellent question. Now, this is another one where we've handled this differently over the eras of Godzilla.
How do they breathe fire?
Well, it depends on which Godzilla you believe, because the different directors of these different, you know, the original shows versus the later movies, sometimes it's just fire-breathing dragon type of fire. Mm-hmm. Other times it's an atomic blast, which is attributed to the fact that the radiation in the what created it.
In the
new movie, it looks like he's spitting lightning out of his...
Yeah, well, that's the cool thing about...
So that's kind of...
About Ghidra is cool. In the trailer, you can see... It's a three-headed monster. You can see its chest start to glow, and then slowly that glow goes up all three necks as it is a three-headed monster. So the glow goes all the way up, and then finally they're able to spit it out. So that means that this is created internal, like, see, because in my mind I was thinking, okay, so the definite, the way that we can get an animal to breathe fire is that we know as human beings we can light our toots, right?
True.
Methane. When we expel a little methane out the booty, we can,
Are you saying that Godzilla's got fart breath?
Well, that's what I'm wondering is, can they breathe that out of their... And then is there a way to trigger it in their throat, like some kind of flint, you know, like they create a spark?
Yeah.
But in the movie, it looks like it's starting internally, like in the chest, stomach area, in the lungs or whatever, as they're exhaling, and it's coming up all the way through their throat. So I'm kind of curious as to how that would work biologically.
Well, maybe they have a thing in their throat. This is all like theory based, but like, what if in their throat they have some sort of thing that allows them to live off of methane? Like they have this thing in their esophagus that will filter out or filter through all of the methane, and then they might be able to breathe it out.
Like, save it for later till they need it.
Yeah, so like a separate storage area for just fire-breathing methane.
Yeah.
Maybe so. I don't know.
And we have a lot of elements that are flammable, right? Hydrogen, methane, you know. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, if you want to think about that, it could just be, you know, as Eddie's saying, it's like, well, somehow they are either generating it or they're pulling it out of the air.
So when we exhale carbon dioxide.
Right.
And there's no way, it's not ignitable, right? It's not flammable, mercifully, because if you're a smoker, that would not go well. Yeah, so when we light a gas, it's usually expelled from behind, and it's methane that's created in the processing of our food, correct? As food gets processed in our, we're learning so much. Our gut bacteria is handling that and creating methane, which we expel. And so maybe these creatures have the ability to do that in reverse. Maybe as they're processing food and breaking food down, they're able to contain that methane or whatever the gas is and then expel it through their throats as well.
They would be incredibly bloated.
That's right.
And that could be why they're so unhappy and feel like attacking New York and Tokyo.
Their bellies are just full of this methane and they're desperate to breathe fire.
All they want is a Tums. Giant Tums.
Oh, that's funny. All right, so we haven't quite sussed out how you could breathe fire. The assumption is that they're exhaling a gas that's ignitable.
Right.
Is that where we're at in this discussion?
In the older Godzilla where they're breathing fire, with the new ones, they call it atomic breath, and it's almost like you said, there's we either see like lightning from one of the creatures to Godzilla. It's almost like a laser beam. It's like something else entirely. And it's attributed to the fact that he was exposed to radiation. So hence the atomic breath.
Somehow radiation factors into.
Right. So somehow he is absorbed enough of this radioactive power that he can then just dispel it as he wants.
Got it. Okay. All right. Well, I think I need to do a little bit more research on fire breath and breathing fire, because it's pretty awesome. And I guess we could equate this discussion to the dragons from Game of Thrones and any other fire-breathing creature.
Right. Right. And the ones that seem to actually breathe fire.
The actual assumption is that it's a gas that they're exhaling that they're able to ignite somehow.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'll go with that.
How to Train Your Dragon.
Exactly. Good old Toothless.
Yeah. So
can Toothless bring its fire?
No, he shoots. Some of the other ones do.
Yes,
yeah, he shoots like impulse
more like
blasts.
That laser pulse.
Like, yeah.
But impulse, there are other ones that
laser pulse.
I don't even want to get down the impulse blast coming out of Toothless the Dragon. Maybe that's another episode. We can sit down and dissect the dragons.
Science from Toothless.
Okay, well then it has been Science or Bull. Eddie, thank you so much for participating in this discussion.
Yeah, I was happy to do it.
I do appreciate it. And Bill, thanks for your insight as well.
You betcha.
This has been Science or Bullshit.
And that brings to a close another episode of Ask a Rocket Scientist. Bill, once again, I can't thank you enough for your insight. Eddie, it's so fantastic to have you joining us in this conversation. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I was happy to do it.
We will be back again soon with another episode of Ask a Rocket Scientist. In the meantime, if you have questions, if you have thoughts, if you want to chime in on our Godzilla discussion or women on the moon or any of the things we talked about this episode, you can always find us at our website, iHeartRocketScience. You can leave comments and questions there. And then also, wherever you downloaded this podcast, give us a little review. Let us know what you think. And it can be a one-star review. I'm fine with a little criticism and commentary and things like that. Just let us know you're listening. We sure would appreciate it. All right, until next time, thanks for listening.
Ask a Rocket Scientist could be brought to you by you. Get your product or service the attention it deserves on a high-quality professional podcast. For more info, go to iHeartRocketScience.com.